Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Overtime 135. Mark Bland, Big Bobby.
What up?
We are just chilling here, having a good time, and we wanted to bring you guys a little extra. I got some more letters from the listeners as well as a couple of questions. Sweet. I think we should talk about them. We're also talking a little bit in between about the tag team wrestling.
Yeah.
And how tag team wrestling doesn't have the oomph that it once had in the past.
Yeah. Tag team wrestling was probably... I just remember watching people like the Steiner Brothers and the Hart Foundation, and I completely forgot about these guys, but the British Bulldogs.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man.
And I just remember being so intrigued by these guys, and now I just feel that tag team wrestling is very underrated. Well, actually, I will say one team that's really good that I like – but they need to be separated and become singles wrestlers is the Shield. I do like Reigns and Rollins together.
The problem with the Shield, I think, is that your strongest competitor, even though Seth Rollins is a very talented wrestler.
As Tyler Black.
He still is a very talented wrestler, and he can handle himself on a singles field.
Right.
I just don't think Tyler, a.k.a. Seth, has what it takes to have a character that is going to truly break out when it comes past the Shield. I think... Ambrose totally has the ability when he was John Moxley and some of the stuff he did on the indie scene, some of the character like attributes that he's bringing to the Shield, that crazy ass aspect, you know. He's got the ability to take that, utilize that, play with it a little bit, and create a new character that is going to end up being the character he is for the rest of his life in pro wrestling. And I think he's the one guy who has the ability to go a lot further. To me, Reigns is just a really big dude. Not a bad wrestler, but he's just a really big dude. They got lots of big dudes already.
And he's got the name behind him, too. He's one of the Wild Samoan's sons.
Well, yeah, of course. But, like, that's not really brought up all that much, and that's not something he's trying to, like, like lay his
But idea. I don't see anything for him outside of the Shield. Like,
right,
I don't really see him being, like, a Dave Bautista.
I don't think there's anything for Seth Rollins outside of the Shield. I think the only one who's really going to break from the Shield and do anything good is Dean Ambrose.
A lot of people said that about Daniel Bryan. Or, I'm sorry, real name, Bryan Danielson. I hate calling him Daniel Bryan because it just angers me that they use that name. But a lot of people were saying that when he came in, they were like, oh, you know, he's not, you know, he was successful on the indie scene, but he's not going to be successful in the big time.
Right, and I think that, you know, that comes down to a lot of marketing. Like, we have that in the music business.
Right.
You know, Monday through Friday, I work in the music business, and we have a lot of that in the music business in the fact that, you know, there are a lot of very talented individuals out there, but they just don't have the marketing dollar behind them to really play the game at the level they need to play the game so that they can showcase how talented they really are and gather themselves a nice following. And so I think that you have the same thing with Daniel Bryan. He's a smaller guy, very talented, very energetic, very good in the ring, very good on the microphone, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But if you don't put him in the right storyline and give him a chance to showcase what he's good at, you know, and here's the funny thing. I think that everybody always says it's about creative. It's always creative that's screwing these guys over or screwing up their chances.
Right.
I don't think that that's what it is. As a former professional wrestler myself and a person who's been in the ring many, many a times, and I've been in cage matches, I've been in, you know, not, I've never been done a death match, but, you know, I've been in first blood matches, you know, time limit draw matches, never did an Iron Man, but I've been in a ton of different, you know, chair on chair match, you know, I've done a ton of matches. I think what it really comes down to is that when you get into this fraternity like a WWE, because it kind of is a fraternity that just tends to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
They need time to learn who you are as a person outside. They need that background outside of the wrestling ring. They can see that you can do the suplexes. They can see that you can do the arm drags and all that stuff. And they can see that you can grab a microphone and talk a bit. But what they really need to get to, if you ever notice, the guys who become the most successful in professional wrestling, they always say are just themselves turned up to 11. It's just their natural part. Stone Cold is just Stone Cold, but in the ring, he just turns it all the way up.
Right.
The Rock is the same guy in the ring as he is out of the ring, but he just turns it all the way up and puts a little bit more emphasis and oomph and puts his eyebrow up. You know, he doesn't do that in normal. And so I think they just take time to learn these guys about who they are backstage. And either you have one of those personalities that melds well with the backstage guys so they have time to learn who you are, or you don't. And if you don't have a backstage persona that allows you to learn and feel and work out some of who you are as a normal person
right.
with these individuals, they just turn really quickly on that and go, well, I don't like him. And so if they don't like you, it's they're not going to learn about you backstage, so therefore they're not going to translate that into something on stage.
Right. Well, I agree with that, but in one aspect I kind of don't, because I look at the Zack Ryder character, who I thought was genius. That guy was so over last year, and then they squashed it so quickly. And
Zack Ryder's a unique situation, and this is my personal opinion. I think what happened with Zack Ryder was Zack was ahead of the curve.
Uh-huh.
If you remember back when Zack Ryder was making a name for himself with YouTube and video views and stuff like that,
WWE
was not pushing an app. They weren't pushing social media. They weren't pushing a lot of that stuff. Right. It wasn't until they realized Zack was being successful outside of WWE's control.
Right.
And although he's technically a WWE wrestler, he has the right to say the name Zack Ryder because that's who he is. He goes online. He promotes these individual videos that WWE has nothing to do with. They see that he's getting a million views or 500,000 views or whatever.
Yeah.
He's getting more looks than some of their in-ring talent is during the shows.
Right, right.
And because they can see off the breakdowns from Nielsen and all that. And then they go, well, what's he doing? Well, he's going onto YouTube and he's doing this little stupid show that everybody likes. Really? So is there any way that we can take that and utilize that to our advantage? So once they realize they can utilize it to their advantage, they put him out there. They start playing with it on TV a little bit. Everybody goes, oh, yeah, yeah, we love his stuff. We love his shit he does on YouTube. That's amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And so then they start cheering him really heavily when they start pushing him a little bit.
Yeah.
So now you get the combination of what was going on behind the scenes that no one knew about mixed with what the money can push you in the ring.
Right, right.
You put the two together, and now you got a fan base that not only is cheering you outside of the ring, they're cheering you while you're in the ring. And then WWE goes, well, we have a lot of guys that get cheered while they're in the ring. Can we duplicate the outside the ring aspect for them also with social media and things like that? Of course we can. Let's get into our social media stance. And Joey Styles is the guy who's really been pushing that from
right,
the backside for years with WWE, and they just never listened until over the last 2 years. And then they got really bad with it to the point where they're like bearing you down
it's
every
annoying.
Show and annoying you with the hashtags and the this, that, and the other.
Yeah, I'm sick and tired of hearing, well, go to WWE.com and download, or go to your app store and download WWE app.
Have you ever noticed how fast they squashed the whole heel Ziggler hashtag when he would wear it on his trunks and come out?
Yeah.
Because he was the second guy right after Ryder. Once Ryder started to get some push in the ring and he was doing the social media thing, and WWE is probably in development of this social media aspect.
Yeah.
Ziggler was the other guy who actually was like, well, I don't need to go and do a video show on YouTube, but I could definitely use Twitter to my advantage. And he would start doing the hashtag heel thing.
Yeah.
And which is kind of a kayfabe thing. So guys who are old school in the business, like Vince and Triple H and those guys, they look down upon that. They're like, oh, why are you using the word heel and babyface and things like that? Like, stop talking about the business behind the business. You know what I'm saying? But you're doing it live on TV because you go to our seamstress, because we give you guys carte blanche. Like, if you have ever seen
the Total Divas show.
They can go to the seamstress whenever they want to and go, hey, we love the uniform here, but can you make us something different, something that changes this, and we'll wear it to the ring. And they don't have to go through creative. They don't have to talk to a bunch of other people, at least from what I saw on that Total Divas show and from what I've heard from other people. They don't have to go through a bunch of creative individuals to authorize and okay what they wear to the ring.
Right.
As long as it falls within the parameters of their character, they can play with it however they want. So here's Ziggler going, hey, put hashtag heel in the back of my shorts.
Yeah.
So that when I go out, so now WWE sees that and they're like, whoa, squash that. No. We're working on something over here. You can't do that, man. Don't do that. So, yeah, man.
It's upsetting because, I mean, I just, you're talking about Ziggler too, man. He's such a huge character and people love the hell out of that guy. And they turn around and, you know, I understand the whole concussion shit and, you know, what happened there. But then to strip the belt and all of a sudden just not have him in that picture when he was the biggest cheered person on TV at that time.
I think that there's more in the works for Ziggler than you think. I think that.
God damn, I hope so.
Well, listen, I had this conversation with somebody else. I was actually talking about it last night when I was talking to some guys from that Dynamo Pro company. And basically, what people need to realize is that, you know, Triple H at one point in his career was a fan.
He was just a kid trying to make it in pro wrestling, hoping to get a $25 payday and just wrestle in front of a crowd at all up at Killer Kowalski's or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, every single one of these guys, even though they become superstars, at one point in their life, they were just a kid and a fan, and then they eventually become a young adult and a fan.
Right.
They understand wrestling. Triple H, I know how much you guys hate John Cena. I know how much you guys hate Triple H. I know how much you think that Triple H just buries everybody. He's going to win every match. Rey Mysterio can't ever lose. John Cena's Super Cena. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I understand that you guys have that problem with them as characters and stuff like that. But behind the scenes, these are real human beings that have been in professional wrestling for a long time.
Right.
And they are fans first and became professional wrestlers because they were fans. They understand professional wrestling.
Yeah.
And the more they do it in the ring every single week in front of large crowds and work on storylines, they learn more and more. And they detail themselves down so finely to where they understand that you guys might not like the fact that Daniel Bryan gets the title stripped from him at SummerSlam immediately with some crap Orton squash that you hate. But there's more to it than just that, guys. Like, they really aren't just going to make – this is a billion-dollar business.
Yeah.
They're making millions and millions a month at WWE.
Right.
They are not going to sacrifice at all in any form, fashion, or shape the ability to continue making millions of dollars.
Right.
Because of some dumb decision and move. They're not that dumb.
Right.
They're very smart.
And you talked about hating John Cena, and oh my goodness, if there's one person I am annoyed with, and I'm so glad that we're getting 6 to 8 months without this guy on TV, is John Cena. And oh my goodness.
Why do you hate John Cena?
I just because I
what
guess
if he went heel? Would you like him if he went heel?
Probably.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. You get tired with the product. You got to remember, they shove him down your throat for the first 2 to 3 years of his career.
Yeah.
Once he wins the title, though, he is a legitimate superstar and contender for a world title at all times.
Right.
So at that point, they're always, as long as he's still getting cheered or they're booing him or whatever, they know that they're getting a reaction out of the crowd. And the point is that people pay their money to go and get a reaction and have a good time. So if you're giving them a boo or, we hate Cena or we love Cena, whatever they're getting, the WWE realizes that that gets a reaction out of the crowd. That means the people are getting their money's worth. They're buying into the product and wanting to see it, even if they have to deal with Cena for 20 minutes.
But I think part of it, though, too, is with Triple H. Triple H was at the top of the game. The Rock was at the top of the game. Stone Cold was at the top of the game for so long. But there were points where they kind of the peaks and valleys. There were points where they valleyed.
They all do.
And they weren't in the main event anymore. And it just seems like forever since he beat JBL at WrestleMania 20, he's been nothing but that main event guy.
But let's be honest.
And I think there's people that are not are better, but I think there's people that could...
Are equally qualified?
Yes.
But that's the problem. I think for many years, WWE didn't believe that they had anyone who was equally qualified. I think Cena came in at a unique time period in WWE. You had a transition out of all of your big superstars that had been running it for 10 years, like Stone Cold and The Rock and Mick Foley. You had those guys transitioning out in the last 2 to 3 years of their careers.
Uh-huh.
And John Cena was coming up. And so he was the next chance that they had. And so now you're in the middle of the 10 years of John Cena being the guy while those guys are transitioning out. And now I think that over the next 5 years, you're going to see John Cena transition out. And I think you're going to see the rise of a few others.
And it's just part of it, too, is you had Batista. You had guys like Batista. You had guys like Edge. You had guys like Randy Orton who weren't always – at that top level. They've had storylines where they were a mid-card guy for a couple months. But it doesn't seem like John Cena's ever been at that level. And I think that's what bothers me the most is these other guys have taken a fall and they've had to be the mid-card guy make room for these other people like Sheamus.
The reason they had to do that, though, is that at a certain point, you got to have a guy they can play off of to try to build another character. If the strongest character is John Cena, he's going to be your best opportunity, especially if people don't like him, even though he's a good guy. People don't like him, that's going to be your strongest opportunity to try to help build a heel faction or a heel character to get somebody up to that level. If you don't have that guy to play off of at that level, you're never going to be able to build your character up to that same level. You got to have – listen – for every Batman, there has to be a Joker. You have to have a Joker-level character.
Right.
If you don't have a Joker-level character, Batman just looks like he's running around beating Scarecrow up all the time, and Scarecrow's weak. He's beating up Mr. Freeze, and Mr. Freeze is weak. You see what I'm saying? Without Kryptonite to help out all the bad guys, Superman's just going to destroy every single person he touches. It's one of those things you have to have someone to play off of at the same level to make it look like there's an even game of some sort.
Yeah,
John Cena's that guy. I'm sorry to say that, and if you might not like it, but John Cena is that game changer at the top level. It's part of life.
I'm really, though, excited about these next 6 to 8 months without him being there to see what they're going to do, because I think they have plenty of talent that are going to be able to help them. Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler. A lot of people don't like him, but I think The Miz is a great talent that is going to be successful. You have the guys from The Shield. I would love to see The Shield disbanded and Dean Ambrose and...
Oh, I think Miz is going to come back a lot sooner than you think as far as, like, main event contention.
I hope so.
I think that Miz would be a great... Like, once they run through the Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton situation...
Right.
I think that you could ramp back around to Miz, with Miz being the guy who cashed in on Orton and plowed him in the middle of the ring with his Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
And in kind of getting the just end desserts on that, because Miz has one of those characters. Or even Miz versus Daniel Bryan. Like, put the title back on Bryan.
I'd love to have the title back on Bryan and see Dolph and Daniel Bryan go at it.
Potentially. Hey, let's move back in and let's finish up some of this stuff here on overtime. I got a letter from the listener, and then we're going to answer a couple questions. My boyfriend and I... Whoa.
Uh-oh.
Are talking about getting married, and I am incredibly excited about marrying this awesome dude. My problem is that my ideal engagement ring is something that looks nice but is cheap. Seriously, a $50 ring would be perfect. I don't want something expensive because, A, it'll make me paranoid about losing it, having it stolen, and, B, I'd rather use the money for something else like a house. However, my guy wants to spend about $1,000 on an engagement wedding ring set. Given his income, this is far from an outrageous expense, but I'd still rather have my $50 cubic zirconia. I've talked with him about this, and we joke about how the stereotypical roles are reversed here, and me being the one who wants to go cheap and him wanting something more. But he's holding fast. Any ideas how I might be able to get my way and make him see he's my prize, not the jewelry? I think that the best thing here is it's only $50 for the cubic zirconia. Let him buy you the $1,000 ring and get yourself the cubic zirconia also.
Yeah.
And just wear the cubic zirconia around if that makes you happy, and just put the $1,000 ring in a box and hand it off to your daughter or your son or whoever when they get old enough to have children and get married themselves.
Absolutely. When I got engaged, my mom gave me my grandma's wedding set, and then that's what I proposed to my wife, Megan.
Me and my wife are never going to be able to do that because our wedding set has been cut off my hand and turns her hand green whenever she wears it. It's a yellow gold set. Well, actually, the ring she bought for me is a ring that's braided rose, yellow, and white gold. Braided. Uh-huh. It's a beautiful ring, and I love that ring. But eventually, it got stuck on my finger, and it swole my finger up between basically where your finger connects to your hand and the first knuckle.
Yeah.
It swole that up literally about 2 inches around in all directions, bright purple and black. And wow. I had to get it cut off. And to fix that ring, they could do just a straight gold piece across of it, but it breaks the braiding look up. So as opposed to breaking the braiding look up, I've decided that I'm just going to leave it cut.
Uh-huh.
Now, my wife's ring, also from the same set, hers is just yellow gold with diamonds in it, but it turned her hand green every time she would wear the ring.
What?
And it didn't start doing that until about a year and a half, almost 2 years into wearing that ring. It would start turning her finger green.
Wow.
And we thought it was like iron deficiency and this and that, and it was not. It was just the ring would turn her hand green. So we never wear our wedding rings at all.
Well, the wedding set that Megan, my wife, actually wears right now cost $30.
Right.
We were at the mall getting our youngest daughter, Jordan's, ears pierced, and she was like, damn, that's a really cool, you know, wedding set. It looks like the $1,200 one that I want, but we don't have the money for it. And I was like, it's probably, you know, $150-$200. She asked the lady, and the lady's like, oh no, it's only $30. I was like, damn right, go ahead and pick that up. And she gets more compliments on the $30 set than the $1,500 set that my grandma had.
That's because nobody ever is going to be sitting at a restaurant, notice the ring, come over and pull out like the eye magnifying glass, and start looking at it and like giving it color and clarity probably.
There's clouds on this diamond.
Nobody's
here.
Ever going to do that. They just look at it from 5 feet away and go, that's a really pretty ring. Can I take a look at that? And then they look at it and they go, oh, wow, that's really pretty.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the story. All right, I got a couple questions for you, Bobby.
Okay.
Let's see if Bobby can answer these bad boys before we get out of here on overtime.
Okay.
What's one thing you absolutely hate about your personality that you know will probably never change?
Stress-free. My wife hates it. Everyone around me hates it. I don't What's have that? A stress.
You never stress.
I don't have a stress. I don't have a need. Well, I have needs for it.
Well, you sound like you stressed when your kid busted her face open.
Well, it wasn't stress. It was fear. Stress and fear, I think, are two different things. But when it comes to money, when it comes to situational things, I don't have a stress level because I don't think that there's any reason to stress.
Weight? What about weight?
No.
If you don't know, we call Big Bobby Big Bobby because Big Bobby, or we used to say Little Bobby because it was a play on words.
Yeah.
Now we call him Big Bobby because, you know, he's older, he's wiser, you know. And I just call him Bobby, honestly. But, you know, he's a larger dude. You know what I'm saying?
420 pounds. He used to almost weigh 500 pounds, but I've dropped down to 420. My goal is to eventually be down to 250, which is what I was when I graduated high school.
Okay.
But, I mean, with weight, it's not a stress. It's just I know I need to get this taken care of. I mean, okay. Honestly, nothing that has ever made me stress.
Anything about my personality that my tone. I'm one of those people that has a natural negative tone built into the way I talk. It uh-huh. sounds condescending. It comes across as irritating and annoying to people. It's just the way my voice projects itself and the tone that my voice has. I could try to change it up to try to accommodate people, but it never will change technically because that's just the natural tone of my voice. And it's a tone that is normally associated with condescension in people's voices. And I get that a lot from people, and it's nothing I can do about it. I can try to talk differently, but that'll just sound fake. So why roll down that road and have to argue that discussion?
Why be somebody you're not?
Yeah. If I gave you $100,000 to produce a video to educate or inspire people, what would it be about?
Oh, man, that's a great damn question. I would probably make a video on how to be a radio personality.
Really?
I think that I do it pretty well. I've had a lot of learning experience. I've learned from quite a few people, including yourself, DC, Jim Fish. I think that would be a great video.
Okay, fair enough. How would the world change if every human was suddenly unable to lie?
Oh, shit.
That would be a really dangerous world to live in right there, bro. Because, like, literally.
It's like the invention of lying, the movie.
I don't think that I don't think there would be as much murder and death as you think. Because if everyone knew they couldn't lie, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Everybody would be desensitized to the idea of someone telling them the truth.
Right.
You would just accept it for what it is. If I just didn't like Bobby, I'd be like, well, Bobby, I really don't like you. And then Bobby, he lives in that same world, so he'd be like, well, he can't lie, so that's just who he is. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
I think that there would be more niche people. There would be more niches.
Yeah.
There would be way more secluded sections of society where they all have an agreeing opinion on certain things.
Yes, yes.
I don't think that people would be as open-minded. There would be no need to be as open-minded.
I'm going to roll with that because that sounds – yeah, I agree with that.
What fad or bandwagon did you most embarrassingly get caught up in?
Boy bands.
You got caught up in boy bands?
Dude, this One Direction, Garbage, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, I'm obsessed. And it's a fad and a bandwagon that I desperately would like to get off of.
Really?
Yes.
You're still there?
Yeah. Dude. Okay, so for anyone who doesn't know my other job, you know, Mark said he works in music. I'm a store manager for a Radio Shack.
Okay.
And we have these devices called the Roku, if anyone knows what that is.
Of course, yeah.
And I can play Vivo on my Roku, and I have it set up with a boy band channel. So I play One Direction, and then I play Backstreet Boys, and then I play NSYNC, all these music videos every day, and my assistant manager hates the hell out of me for it.
Why would you do that to him?
Well, now it's kind of funny, but it's just it's music that I listen to, and I can't help it. I will drive down the street with NSYNC's Bye 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 playing with the windows down, rolling up at a red light next to someone, and they look at me like I'm a moron. Stop.
That's horrible, dude. I can't believe it. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Well, that's going to do it for us here on Overtime 135. I want to thank Little Bobby.
Absolutely. It was a great time. If you guys get a chance, go to theqnow.com. At the bottom of the page, click on the Amazon ad, and you can buy all those boy band CDs.
Yeah, you sure can. We're going to get out of here with some Backstreet Boys. We will see you guys next time on The Q. Please tell a friend or family member. Tell a loved one. Just tell everyone about how interesting and entertaining this show. Like us on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
Follow Bobby, CC.
CC Papa.
CC Papa. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it. We'll see you guys next time on The Q.
Save me from the man that I become. Oh, yeah.